information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight, we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Can you see the enemy is in the fine print? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 224 from Media Monarchy. It's July 8th, 2011, and my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, the culture of fear and the American X mixtape. Independence Play, Atlantis Events, and Justice is Swerved. Online Jihad, Xbox SWAT, and Pretty Silly Yellowstone, plus the 7-7 News Purge, False Flag Fatty, Temple of Treasure, Survey Slaughter, and Symbolism. All that, so very much more. July 8th, 2011, episode 224 from MediaMonarchy.com.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that.
Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life going strife into the mix, to the pick, dark condition, and the word is sick. The powers to be are powering me to speak upon stress and strife that I see every day. And launch a speaker bomb, culture of fear is up in your ear. They're telling us terrorists about to strike, baby, tonight. Right, let me just back up slowly with critical analysis of those who control me. It used to be we just had a screen in the crib on the TV, but now we carry screens when we leave. See laptops, smartphones, now we're never alone. A new affliction I call media dome. But on the road, famine is the programming. You wanna watch your favorite show because it's so slamming. Hold hands and let's gaze into the beautiful glare while we're here, so immersed in this culture of fear.
Culture of Fear. That is the title track and lead cut from the brand new record from Washington, D.C.'s own independent international DJ duo known as Thievery Corporation. And we'll touch more on them in just a few moments. But first, ladies and gentlemen, let me formally welcome you to the 224th episode for Media Monarchy. It's July 8th, 2011, and my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.com. And a huge thanks to revereradio.net and zeropointradio.com for simulcasting this show. Zero Point Radio, huge thanks. I love their support, and it makes it that much easier to do this for you. You can, of course, hook up FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Gmail, Skype, and we've even launched a Tumblr site. So just another way to feed this information out and to hit as many different folks as we can with alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, plus interviews, weekly videos, mixtapes, so many more things. And if you find Media Monarchy valuable, I'll do the dirty work. I'll provide and sift through all the ugly news and bring it to you every week. More jam-packed news than you're likely to find on any other alternative media podcast, MediaMonarchy.com. There's a donate button at the top right of the page. If you appreciate it, please click that button. Anything is appreciated, and your support, both financially and morally, spiritually, whatever you want to call it, all of those things, spreading the word, talking about it, it all helps. As I look at the other things I want to make sure I mention, and this is going to be a jam-packed episode, it's going to be a clip-heavy episode, so I'm going to keep my jibber-jabber to a minimum, but the second episode of NavigatingNetflix.com has been shot and will be coming very soon. And I suppose I can go ahead and tell you, it's Idiocracy. So if you go to NavigatingNetflix.com and you hit the Your Cue tab, you'll be able to see a list of the upcoming episodes. So you can go there, watch the film in advance through Netflix, and then when that episode comes up, you'll already be ready, and you'll be ready to dive into the discussion and go, as Pauline Kael said, deeper into movies. So episode 2 of Navigating Netflix coming very soon from yours truly at MediaMonarchy.com and the fine folks and hardworking media producers at TragedyAndHope.com. We also always like to thank Radio23.org for the extra hosting in addition to Archive.org and RadioForAll.net and all the other platforms that we use and abuse and utilize to be able to spread all this information out for as cheaply and efficiently as possible. If we glance at the breaking news on this Friday, July 8th morning, Atlantis blasts off on final flight for space shuttle program. Meanwhile, Judge to Head, News of the World, hacking inquiry, and that is one of the stories we go over in the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. More on that in just a few moments. America sees its obesity rates and raises them with, of course, bad news for my home state of West Virginia. And the jobs report dashes recovery optimism. Not sure whose optimism was dashed, because I think most people here on the ground floor know that it's not going very well, and we don't have much optimism, because we know that the interlocking, interbred families and corporations through generations have seized everything we thought was ours and everything we think is there to help us, whether that's the schools or the foods or the banks or the media or the military or any of those things. They've all been seized systematically through generations by these families, by these multi-generational serial killers, if you will. And that's why I'm here. I have a background in college radio. I was the music guy. I got interested in alternative news and alternative history post 9/11. And so I take my college radio and sound design, theatrical kind of know-how, and transverse that over to alternative media, and hopefully this kind of show makes this material accessible to folks. And I'm not here to lecture. I don't have all the answers. But it's all about the sharing. And that's how we'll share and learn and grow. and learn our way out of these problems. And again, so many of the things that I mention and say and become sort of part of my repertoire, I always want to thank, you know, the folks that I get some of these ideas and sayings from, and so many of them come from Richard Grove of TragedyandHope.com. Multi-generational serial killers, specifically in this case. But we will keep the Google News page open, just in case if anything breaks, we can report it for you live here. But back to our intro song, and that was, as I said, the title track and the lead cut from the brand new record from Thievery Corporation. They are essentially an electronic instrumental duo, and they will have guest vocalists on albums. Some of their past albums, like The Cosmic Game, had a ton of folks on it. Flaming Lips and Perry Farrell and all kinds of folks. Who you heard rhyming on that song, Culture of Fear, was Mr. Liff. I implore you to check out his record, I, Phantom, and the Home of the Brave EP especially. But this new record caused me to write up an original piece on MediaMonarchy.com, something I wish I had more time to do, and something I'm trying to do, and when I sit down and do it, I'm actually amazed at how quickly I can bust it out when the lightning strikes. So, such as a couple of weeks ago, when we covered the Willis Tower, or the Sears Tower, and the deck, and of course the connections between the drills, the private insurance scams, and Silverstein, and Rahm Emanuel, and all of those things. I wrote up an original piece on that. So I wrote up a quick thing about this new Thievery Corporation record. Thievery Corporation blasts the culture of fear. It's been nearly 3 years since the long-running DC duo known as Thievery Corporation plotted Radio Retaliation. Now they're back with their sixth studio album, and it's called Culture of Fear. The group has a long history of conspiratorial-sounding song lyrics, such as, I'm the president of the shadow government, the grand governor of the Federal Reserve, public enemy of the society, which we played that track for you, 33 Degrees, nearly 3 years ago when Radio Retaliation came out. And even some of their album titles, such as The Mirror Conspiracy and The Richest Man in Babylon. And while the new record features song titles like Web of Deception, Tower 7, and False Flag Dub, which we will hear later in the show, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer points out that, quote, despite the album title, Culture of Fear rarely addresses specific political issues, end quote. Most of the reviews for the record haven't exactly been glowing, and even their hometown D.C. city paper worries that, quote, the group has sunk into a quicksand of bizarre politico-mysticism, end quote. One can't help, or at least myself, be reminded of Muse, another band that uses conspiracy culture in their themes, in their albums, in their lyrics. So the question becomes, is it all just a marketing pose? Well, as with all art, the audience will have to answer that question for themselves. An excellent anonymous comment to this post, and I'll read it for you. Thievery Corporation's put out some good music. At their best, they're trippy, groovy, and mellow like no other. Maybe this isn't one of their best albums, but I don't doubt their intentions or integrity. And as we noted, they are an independent band. 18th Street Lounge, they've got a record label and a club, and they've built it by themselves. And of course, electronic music never quite took off in the States, but internationally, they're huge. But I don't doubt their intentions or integrity, without good reason at least. They're artists and businessmen primarily, not activists or journalists. But the themes all seem right on to me. I don't have an expectation of a fully thought-out explicit statement, and it doesn't seem like just a marketing pose. There are much more easily commercial ways to go, of course. And even if name-dropping False Flag and Tower 7 became trendy, I think that that'd be a good thing, and it could have entered into the mainstream consciousness so much. Then people would gradually start to realize 9/11 was an inside job, just like over 40 years ago people began to realize JFK wasn't killed by a lone gunman. So thank you, whoever that is, anonymous comment. That is an excellent point, and I wasn't really trying to denigrate the band, just more pose these questions. And if it were more explicit, if it maybe were more in your face, pointing a finger in your face, such like a Jello Biafra or Alex Jones, for that matter, that can turn a lot of folks off. But if you plant these ideas and put those out there and just, you know, name an instrumental song, False Flag Dub, kids out there looking it up, that's going to connect up in the whole hyperlink Word Cloud Association, and people will discover Tower 7, false flags, and more. So, like I said, that's the brand new Thievery Corporation album, Culture of Fear. It's out on their own label, 18th Street Lounge. And as I said, we'll hear one more track from them a little later in the show. So as long as we're talking music, my friends, on the 4th of July, I posted mixtape number 10. That's American X. Or 10, if you like. Where we note that real freedom scares you because it means responsibility, quoting the aforementioned Jello Biafra. This one's got music and commentary by the Dead Kennedys, Two Live Crew, Idlewild, TSOL, Misfits, The Hood Internet, Blur, George Carlin, Bill Hicks, Doug Stanhope, and so much more, because it can't be news and politics all the time. Mixtape 10, American X, 1 hour, pre-mixed for your listening pleasure, and hopefully more and more of those will be coming out. I've already started to put together mixtape 11 because I get so excited about them. I want to do more and more of them. So hopefully you guys dig the mixtapes half as much as I do. We also have, as I mentioned, the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, weekly video series between myself and CorbettReport.com, episode 79, published yesterday on 7/7, Phone Hacking, FBI OKC CCTV, and Hemingway's Hell. Stories 1 and 3 we will go over, at least briefly, on this episode, but I realize story number 2 is only linked up on my site on this New World Next Week episode, and that is OKC bombing videotapes might have been misfiled, impossible to know where, as Jesse Trentadue has been doing yeoman's work trying to find out, one, about the mysterious murder of his brother Kenneth, and two, what really happened in Oklahoma City. Story number 1, Murdoch tabloid under fire after hacking into murder victims' phones, and that story has mushroomed wildly even as we tape this episode. I mentioned this story is changing and updating rapidly, so even when the story and the episode got posted, we learned after the fact. Murdoch's killing news of the world altogether, but more on that in just a few moments. Third story, Ernest Hemingway driven to suicide over FBI surveillance. So my friends, as always, check out NewWorldNextWeek.com from Media Monarchy and CorbettReport.com. Episode 193 from CorbettReport.com, The Philosophy of Freedom, Independence Day. In June 1776, Thomas Jefferson drafted one of the most important political documents in the history of the world. The Declaration of Independence was a breathtakingly revolutionary document for its time. But what does it tell us about our situation today? If we're faced by a train of abuses and usurpations, will we respond in kind? Would we sign the Declaration ourselves? Posted along with this episode are, as always, the latest interviews and videos from CorbettReport.com, Sunday Update, Radiation Cover-Ups Confirmed, Los Alamos, Fort Calhoun, Fukushima, TSA, we are soaking in it. Sunday Update now done in conjunction with GlobalResearch.ca, and The Eye Opener done in conjunction with BoilingFrogsPost.com, Sibel Edmonds and Peter Collins and other folks. Latest episode, NGOs and Foundation Funding, Who Watches the Watchdogs? And the most other recent video in the Last Word series, The Last Word on Independence. Latest Corbett Report interviews with Michael Badnarik, Andrew Gavin Marshall, James Roberts, and Eric Schein. So much amazing media constantly coming from CorbettReport.com. And my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org, live weeknights, 9 to midnight on KXL.com worldwide, blasting out of Portland, Oregon. Latest episodes and articles, Independence Play, Justice is Swerved, and more. And as I mentioned, I'm indebted to so many of the folks whose... I love wordplay. I love puns. I love clever, mimetic ideas. And Clyde Lewis is another great one. Every episode of the weekday is accompanied by an article and a little original piece of art to go along with it. So last Monday, July 4th, Independence Play. Tuesday was Soda Pop Ufology. Wednesday, Suspect Zero. Justice is Swerved on the Casey Anthony distraction. And Thursday's episode was the Electric Personality. All that and so much more from groundzeromedia.org. Let's now move to one of the sister sites in the growing media monarchy kingdom, and that is cyberspacewar.com. And the story that I mentioned we covered on the latest episode of New World Next Week, Murdoch tabloid under fire after hacking into murder victims' phones. And of course, just in time for the 7/7 anniversary, the false flag attacks in the UK on July 7th, 2005. Even families of 7/7 victims were targets of this phone hacking. And as we mentioned, the update, no more news of the world. Murdoch journalists stunned by the paper's closure. So rather than rereading the Guardian piece that we read for you on NewWorldNextWeek.com, let's go deeper with one of the most recent clips I was able to get for you on this story that I thought was going to fly under the radar because of the Casey Anthony distraction. But that wrapped up, and this seemed to take its place, and it does fulfill some of the same roles as people love these human interest stories. And of course, oh my God, a little white girl disappeared, which of course we know thousands of people go missing every day, and kids go missing all the time. That's the larger picture. But this story has now exploded, and we are glad because it shows the malfeasance on, again, all those sides, all those things you thought were working for you, the media, or in this case, the media and the police. Murdoch tabloid under fire after hacking into murder victims' phones.
Now, it might be the end for the news of the world, but tonight this program has new revelations from the private investigator at the heart of the hacking scandal. He says the paper decided which victims to target by committee. Glenn Mulclair was secretly recorded on camera as he was confronted by one of his phone hacking victims and admitted that he lost his moral compass. The former head of the Metropolitan Police Anti-Corruption Unit also told Channel 4 News he was warned off investigating illegal payments to corrupt police officers. Our Home Affairs correspondent Andy Davis has been investigating the scandal with the Channel 4 dispatches team. This is their special report.
For nearly 5 years, his name has been synonymous with this scandal. Glenn Mulcair, the former News of the World private investigator, suspected hacker of Millie Dowler's phone and thousands of others. Tonight, he's confronted by one of his alleged victims. And in his first ever interview on the issue, we hear from a former anti-corruption chief who once tried to investigate journalists paying police.
It's not legal for a journalist to pay a police officer or any public official to do something that's contrary to his duty. That is corruption.
In March 2003, Rebecca Brooks had just left the News of the World to edit The Sun. She appeared before a parliamentary committee and made a startling admission.
Can I not just ask whether they ever pay the police?
Sorry?
It's just the one element of whether you ever pay the police for information.
Yeah.
We have paid the police for information in the past, and it's been...
And will you do it in the future?
It depends
on... We operate within the code and within the law, and if there's a clear public interest, then within the same holds for private detectives, for subterfuge, for video bags, whatever you want to talk about.
It's illegal for police officers to receive payments.
No. As I said, within the law.
This year, Brooks was questioned again by a committee about this statement. She clarified that she was in fact just commenting on a widely held belief and had no knowledge of any specific payments.
Yesterday, the head of Scotland Yard announced they would now be investigating this whole issue of police bribes and journalists. It was a dramatic development. But as Channel 4 News can reveal, the police have tried to delve into this murky world before. It was in 2003. And we know that because the man who was head of the anti-corruption unit at the time, who was investigating this, has decided to give his first ever interview on the subject.
We had lots of intelligence coming in that there were little bits of information that clearly had been leaked from our organisation. And there had been one or two slightly higher profile cases where we'd got members of the public, quite some celebrities, who had either been involved in crime or been victims of crime. And then, you know, their names have found their way into the papers very, very quickly, you know, the following morning sort of thing. And it really could only have come from one of ours.
But only now are details emerging of just how widespread and accepted this practice was. Paul McMullen was deputy features editor at the News of the World, under the editorship of Rebecca Brooks.
As I recall, it was like £200 to spin a number plate so you'd know who had visited a celebrity or someone. Whereas a good story that's published over a couple of pages would be between £5,000 and £10,000.
Is it sort of accepted practice to pay the police?
Yeah.
One way of attempting to legitimise the feeding of information from officers to journalists, we understand, was to register the reporter as a confidential police source or informant. Channel 4 News has learned that at least one News of the World journalist was registered in this way and given his own code name. The journalist cannot be named for legal reasons. An attempt to prosecute him for paying a police officer for information failed.
And so that brings us to the inevitable and frankly urgent question in all of this, which is, if journalists knew these illegal police payments were fairly common, if the police knew about it and were even beginning to investigate it as far back as 2003, why is it only now that Scotland Yard has finally come out publicly and said it wants to tackle this bribes issue head on? Well, the former head of anti-corruption at the Met has revealed to us for the first time tonight how he once received a warning on this issue.
I was given what I think was very good advice at the time, that if you go for a journalist and you convict him, then that's a good job. But if he gets away with it, if you don't quite make it, there will be plenty of his colleagues who will round on the organisation and you will be punished.
The sale of police information can have devastating consequences for those whose details are passed on. As the Anti-Corruption Unit continued its investigations under Steve Roberts, in 2003 a case unfolded involving a young woman who went to the police to report a violent sexual assault. She had been attacked by a minor celebrity.
I was told if I pressed charges against this man, I'd have lifelong anonymity, and that meant that my name would never be released in connection with the case and certainly never be printed or broadcast. If it was printed or broadcast, then the people who were responsible would go to prison.
The Crown Prosecution Service eventually dropped the case. The victim's identity should still have been protected, but Sam found herself hounded by reporters.
The press seemed to know everything about me. Certainly my name had been leaked, certainly my name. They knew where I lived, they knew where my mum lived, they knew where I went to school. They were knocking on my neighbour's doors, shouting through my letterbox, shouting sums of money through my letterbox, trying to get me to sell my story.
It was clear that someone had breached Sam's anonymity order, and details that appeared in the News of the World seemed to point to one source.
There is no way that that News of the World journalist could have got the information about me unless it was given by the police. It could only have come from my statement, somebody who had read my statement. Quoting me verbatim, it had to come from my statement or from my filmed interview.
We'll be right back.
released March 11th, 1978. That's News of the World from The Jam. And isn't it interesting in those clips that the story about the phone hacking all seems to center on Glenn Mulcair and that he hacked these phones of Millie Dowler, who was a murder victim. But then the story becomes about how the police are in collusion with corrupt investigators and quote-unquote journalists working for the News Corporation. So, of course, that was the perfect opportunity to play that fantastic tune from The Jam, News of the World. And as we continue on cyberspacewar.com, we can see 17 minutes ago from USA Today, Shuttle Atlantis reaches orbit for the final time. And as the late, great William Cooper wrote, the Columbian Enterprise to endeavor for the discovery of Atlantis and all challengers shall be destroyed. The final shuttle, STS-135, launched this morning. We have a post on cyberspacewar.com with links, and you can watch it live in LA Times, and there was some discussion about whether or not the weather would scuttle it. But that leads us to the 7-7 DEF CON, the news purge on cyberspacewar.com on the Atlantis event, and awesome announcements. The Washington Post reporting these coming ahead of the launch posted yesterday. Atlantis launch will be iconic event, the last of its kind. Full range of opinions and emotions surround the last shuttle flight. That's from NASAWatch.com. And you can watch and check out other things from the Los Angeles Times as well as NASA's YouTube channel with the big screen launch events and tributes and Facebook pages and yada yada. An interesting one from Space.com on NASA's dramatic rescue plan in case of shuttle emergency. But as we head on around the rest of the universe, from TheEcologist.org, plans to strip mine the moon may soon be more than just sci-fi. Security grifters partner up on sinister cyber surveillance project. Antifascistcalling.blogspot.com. Always doing great work, exposing the connections between the private intelligence corporations and whatever the latest terror scare is going to be, whether that's on the planes or on the computers, or they're ready for it. War is a racket. Army's $2.7 billion cloud computing system does not work. That's from Raw Story. And a great one from John C. Dvorak. Or the buzzkill, if you like, half of the No Agenda show with Adam Curry. Hackers are everywhere! Panic! That's his new piece on PCMag.com, as we have seen, as we have, I think, documented quite well for you in the last couple of years on Media Monarchy, that we would see the build to an I-9-11 event, which we fortunately have not seen. And we're using all these tools while we can, because you know that there is an iPatriot Act sitting on the shelf waiting. Hackers claim Apple security breach. Hacker allegedly breaches Florida voting database. Fox News Politics Twitter feed hacked. And they put out a hoax assassination tweet that President Obama had been assassinated in Omaha, I believe. Facebook's awesome announcement was Skype video chat being integrated into the massive intelligence data gathering social network site known as Facebook. That's from CBSNews.com. CBS News, of course, the Columbia Broadcasting System with its intelligence and Skull and Bones connections and Henry Luce and Time Magazine and all that. Telegraph reports 1 in 3 overwhelmed by technology. And our last note comes from Raw Replay. Geocaching treasure hunt leads to UK bomb scare. An internet treasure hunt. Some of the other things around the universe on cyberspacewar.com. UFO TV, Planet Mars, and the World of Tomorrow. Getting into the work of whistleblowers like Laura Eisenhower and Andrew Basiago. Planet Mars and the World of Tomorrow. The Perfect Slave Project, The Grandest Deception, semi-retired Southeast Texas obstetrician Dr. Jack Pruitt heard Zachariah Sitchin on the radio 5 years ago and never looked back. Even worked with Ron Paul. So more on the Anunnaki agenda. We also have a post on Major Donald Kehoe, an early pioneer of ufology, and an update on hacker Gary McKinnon. Blogger Grant Lawrence reminds us in a recent alternate post, Gary McKinnon has said consistently in numerous interviews that the U.S. has advanced space fleets that are capable of star travel. He's never backed down from his assertions. Maybe McKinnon has not said all he knows. You should ask what lies behind the intense efforts to extradite Gary McKinnon from Europe to Europe Jr. That would be America, as George Carlin called it. Because he hacked into computer systems. He was looking for things about space technologies and also things related to the false flag terror events of September 11th, 2001. Even a 2006 article in Wired, UFO hacker tells what he found, shows McKinnon freely providing details of his hacking adventure. As we continue with cyberspacewar.com updates, Al-Qaeda online jihadism overlooked. And returning to Danger Room, article reports Obama's counterterrorism crew missing the big picture by focusing on physical war theaters and ignoring the internet. As the United States attacks Al-Qaeda's physical safe havens, the terrorist response is to congregate in online spaces where they can't be blown up by a Hellfire missile or shot by a SEAL. The article does find a more concerted effort by U.S. desktop warriors. Even if the new White House counterterrorism strategy treats the internet like an afterthought, but we know they want to fight the net as an enemy weapon system, the operational elements of American counterterrorism are more focused. U.S. CENTCOM setting up online stings and infiltrating jihadi message boards. It's doubtful anything online is ignored by intelligence, even those in the executive branch. John Brennan, former Deputy National Security Advisor for Homeland Security and Terrorism. Perhaps that's his current job. I forget. Was he National Security Advisor up until about last year? Links for you. John Brennan sets the table for the imperial agenda and lends a piece of air of propaganda. The DNS advisor and assistant to the president, quote, called Anwar al-Awlaki, the U.S. citizen now affiliated with al-Qaeda's Yemen branch, very, very dangerous. How'd he get that way? Through emailing with Fort Hood shooter Nidal Malik Hassan and would-be Christmas bomber Umar Farouk Abdul-Muttalab. Well, probably emailing. Both men say they communicated with one another. It's sure difficult to stomach John Brennan's view, as al-Awlaki has, of course, had lunch with Pentagon officials, suggesting, to put it lightly, intelligence ties. Passenger and attorney Kurt Haskell, remember him? He had a front row seat to the tale of the Christmas underwear bomber and the sharp-dressed man who got him on the plane, bypassing security. Haskell believes the well-dressed man was U.S. government who aided the terrorist bypass of a check-in. Webster Tarpley, political analyst at Tarpley.net, cast doubt in his fine article, Major Hassan in Fort Hood, a patsy in a drill gone live, on al-Awlaki, al-Qaeda, and Major Hassan as little more than dupes and patsies in an intelligence-organized, foreign-looking troop of actors. The Danger Room article concludes there are good and bad ways to confront online jihadism, but to ignore it might be the biggest unforced error of all. You can determine if White House is overlooking the threat and more about al-Qaeda in the publication National Strategy for Counterterrorism, posted for you in the PDF link provided, if you can handle it. The only good news in there is that al-Qaeda is cited more than domestic groups as a key threat. Domestic groups meaning all of us who don't like what's going on and will be painted as extremists or militias or lone wolves or conspiracy theorists when we're all just people who have realized that, as we've said, interlocking families have systematically destroyed everything we thought was public. The EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, know your rights. It's a sign of the times, but you may want to know your digital rights before the suits knock at your door. The Electronic Frontier Foundation website, EFF.org, provides a Q&A section with helpful tips. The best tips are the same whenever dealing with any kind of law enforcement. Number one, don't consent to a search. Number two, don't answer questions. And number three, ask for a lawyer. A printable PDF of the Q&A is available with a PDF link for you. And you can also take an EFF quiz to check your digital rights IQ. And our last couple of posts on cyberspacewar.com. This one from KPRC in Houston, but set in Florida. Hacker hijacks Xbox, sends SWAT to your home.
I got a whole SWAT team at my door. I'm like, I come out of my room, they got guns pointing at me.
When 15-year-old Hunter Galinas played his Xbox, he never imagined real deputies to be standing outside.
Open my door, had the whole SWAT team down in the front door. I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna die.
Hunter says his Xbox had been hacked, and the hacker called in the hoax about the family being held captive.
A handicap line saying that Hunter had been stabbed and the parents and other people were being held hostage at the house.
They all had their guns up like they were ready in case anyone was going to fire on them or something.
Sam Murphy was minding his own business when deputies' cars flooded his street.
When I heard it was a hoax, it kind of made more sense because I figured, you know, it's the neighborhood, nothing really happens here.
Deputies confirmed the home invasion was a hoax and no one was ever hurt.
The kid says he lives in Canada. We don't really know who he is, just the location that comes up on the computer.
Deputies took laptops and gaming systems from the home to try to track down leads. Computer experts say hackers have easy accessibility to your information and even your phone lines.
You said these hackers can very easily get into an Xbox system and call 911.
Sure, there's nothing there to stop them. Once they gain accessibility to the machine, they can do whatever they want, as long as they have the capability and the knowledge to do it.
Wexel says the best way to prevent it from happening, keep your gaming systems off the internet. The Galinas family says it's game over for now.
You don't know really who you're talking to when you're on those games, so have to be careful nowadays.
They said I had been stabbed and there were seven people in the house. They were holding hostages.
Only on Wink at 10 tonight, it's something straight out of the movies. A home invasion turns into a hoax, all because of a hacker.
It happened at a home on Morning Sun Lane in Collier County late this afternoon. Genevieve Judge spoke with victims, neighbors, and a computer tech to find out how this all went down. The family tells me it all started when their 15-year-old was playing video games with someone over the internet. Well, that internet partner decided to play more than just a game and called 911 about a hostage situation at the 15-year-old's house. That brought SWAT members and deputies to the house, only to find out later it was all just a hoax.
They got a whole SWAT team at my door. I'm like, I come out of my room, they got guns pointing at me.
When 15-year-old Hunter Galinas played his Xbox, he never imagined real deputies to be standing outside.
Open my door. Had the whole SWAT team down in the front door. I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna die.
Hunter says his Xbox had been hacked, and the hacker called in the hoax about the family being held captive.
A handicap line saying that Hunter had been stabbed and the parents and other people were being held hostage at the house.
They all had their guns up like they were ready in case anyone was going to fire on them or something.
Sam Murphy was minding his own business when deputies' cars flooded his street.
When I heard it was a hoax, it kind of made more sense because I figured, you know, in the neighborhood, nothing really happens here.
Deputies confirmed the home invasion was a hoax and no one was ever hurt.
Kid says he lives in Canada. We don't really know who he is, just the location that comes up on the computer.
Deputies took laptops and gaming systems from the home to try to track down leads. Computer experts say hackers have easy accessibility to your information and even your phone line.
So these hackers can very easily get into an Xbox system and call 911.
Sure, there's nothing there to stop them. Once they gain accessibility to the machine, they can do whatever they want, as long as they have the capability and the knowledge to do it.
Wexel says the best way to prevent it from happening, keep your gaming systems off the internet. The Galinas family says it's game over for now.
You don't know really who you're talking to when you're on those games, so have to be careful nowadays.
The Collier County Sheriff's Office says that they're investigating the hoax, but at this point, no charges have been filed. In Collier County, Genevieve Judge, Wink News Now.
Now, those were, of course, two very similar reports, both coming from the exclusive story on this invasion hoax in Collier County, Florida, and it comes from Wink TV. But let's break down this propaganda piece with Kotaku.com and a story from Owen Good. Instead of delivering instead of bogus pizza deliveries, sending a SWAT team to your door appears to be the hip new griefing trend in online gaming. Earlier this month, we told you about a gamer in Eugene, Oregon, who answered the doorbell to a police raid thanks to some douchebag he met in Fortress Craft. Now it's happened to someone in Florida. Local news blames this on hackers, without explaining why it's necessary to hack another person's Xbox 360 in order to make a prank phone call. In this case, Collier County, Florida deputies were told someone at a local residence had taken hostages and was suicidal, so they rolled out the SWAT to the location. It didn't take long to discover this was a giant misunderstanding, but not before the requisite pointing of guns in someone's face. Short on specifics, what we can deduce is that Hunter Galinas, 15, had been playing online and evidently got into a pissing match with someone. The other person's revenge was not just in sending the law heavily armed to his home. His victim also had computer equipment seized, even though he's not a suspect, as authorities try to trace the griefer, believed to be living in Canada. Again, local TV, in this case Wink of Fort Myers, Florida, can't get out of this without sowing some good old fear and ignorance. They remind everyone that hackers have easy access to your personal information and even your phone lines. The best course of action is never go online, especially with the game system, because that's entirely reasonable. God help you if you get your news from local television. That is linked up in our post on cyberspacewar.com. Hacker hijacks Xbox, sends SWAT to home. And our last two posts on cyberspacewar.com will set the stage for our transition into all the latest BioWars and EnviroHealth updates. But is flooding of biblical proportions along the Mississippi River, or rather the Missouri River, possible? An author writing a book on flooding hazards of the Missouri River, Bernard Shanks, wrote a commentary on the risks. St. Louis Total Information AM interviewed Bernard Shanks and following the wakes of heightened concern. A more recent interview is linked up for you. The old Fort Peck Dam in eastern Montana, constructed with a faulty design, never used again, is still considered a low risk to fail by Shanks. The bad news is if the dam were to fail, it would be sudden with little warning. This would heighten risks of 5 lower dams failing and sweeping radioactive material stored at Fort Calhoun, Nebraska nuclear plant into the flood. So will life jackets, inflatable rafts, and Geiger counters be in high demand before the summer is out? And the other related piece to our nuclear situation of 2011... Fukushima in slow motion. Theoretical physicist, here he is again, Michio Kaku, provides some insight into the dangers at both Los Alamos, remember there's a fire raging and they're having difficulties there, and Fort Calhoun, and Fort Cooper, I believe, in Nebraska. Kaku notes it's a good thing Los Alamos doesn't store nuclear bombs there, but a bad thing that there are barrels of nuclear waste on the site. Kaku provides the best insight into the potential tragedy at a flooded Fort Calhoun nuclear plant, quote, like Fukushima in slow motion. It only takes 36 hours for water to boil off once water pumps fail. The physicists put threshold for flooding pumps at an additional 2 feet. At that point, it would be Fukushima 2.0. So will this year be remembered as the very tense nuclear summer of 2011? That wraps up all the latest on cyberspacewar.com. And again, as always, huge thanks to my man Alan in Omaha for posting and writing so many stories on cyberspacewar.com now, I believe, in compared to the other sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, cyberspacewar.com has the most being posted to it. So that gives me the opportunity to yet again throw out the mention that if anybody has any interest, knowledge, passion, know-how, and wants to help post or write stories for any site in any area within the Media Monarchy Kingdom, of course, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. As we hop back to the flagship site to get our BioWars and EnviroHealth updates just posted in the list form, as I suppose as the years have gone by in doing the website and the radio show, again, essentially by myself, as things escalate, as more things seem to connect, and as the media explosion happens, because fortunately, thank God, millions of other people out there are collecting, gathering, disseminating, analyzing all the news and happenings in their area of the world, in their area of expertise or knowledge or passion. What I'm saying is, this is a list of headlines, and we lay out the path for you, what makes your ears perk up, or eyes roll, or piques your curiosity, or is a meme you've already been following. That's what we try and do, is tell the story of the week, and things kind of present themselves. And I hope that all the things and all of the headlines and all of the references that we make here hit different people on their levels. But I digress. BioWars EnviroHealth, Pretty Silly Yellowstone, and Superfast Jellyfish. 42,000 gallons of oil dumped into the Yellowstone River. More on that from KTVQ.com, and I would just go get some news as a yet another developing story. Meanwhile, the Montana governor says ExxonMobil's claim of limited spill damage is pretty silly. And isn't this interesting? Grizzly bear allowed to roam Yellowstone after killing a man. More on that from Reuters. Despite fire threat to Los Alamos lab, plans proceed for plutonium bomb factory. So there goes the good side that we said nuclear bombs weren't stored there. More on that from the always great allgov.com. Deadly chemical accident at a Tyson chicken plant in Arkansas puts 173 workers in the hospital. More on that from naturalnews.com. Problems with storage of a chemical at the DuPont plant in Poor Bell, West Virginia. More on that from wvmetronews.com. And returning to the story of the Pacific Coast, Fukushima. Here I am in Portland in the Pacific Northwest, as we realized very early on, post 3/11, that we weren't getting the straight answer from TEPCO, from the government, from the media outlets, and people have been taking this upon themselves. I think as each catastrophe seems to unfold in this problem-reaction-solution kind of paradigm, the Hegelian dialectic to force us along, we think we're making decisions, but they've been mapped out for us, false decisions. It's at least heartening, I guess is the word I could use, to see each new level busting out and bringing people into a more active and interactive mode. As we say, get active or get radioactive. Oregon advertising studio tracks Fukushima radiation.
If you were to picture the sort of person who might take the lead in gathering radiation data from the Fukushima nuclear accident, Marcelino Alvarez probably wouldn't come to mind.
My background is actually not in physics or nuclear physics or science or radiation data. It's actually in advertising and building websites and doing product development.
But Alvarez also follows what's happening in the world. During the early days of the Fukushima crisis, he watched the news coverage nonstop. And he was surprised that even the experts were having a hard time finding accurate, up-to-date information.
And so I said to myself, there's got to be a better way. And so I drew a really crude sketch, and I sent it to our creative director and said, what do you think about this? What if we made a site that just, you know, invited people to contribute their own data? And so we designed it, and 2 days after that, basically launched the first version of the site.
That website became what's now called Safecast. The homepage has a constantly updating map of Japan, with little pins charting the latest radiation data. Safecast aggregates data from official public sources and lets volunteers upload their own Geiger counter readings. Alvarez drew on his background in web design and location-based mobile apps to pull it together. He's also working with scientists in the United States and Japan, and individual programmers in Tokyo.
So we've got official Japanese ministry data, we have volunteers in Japan data, we have Greenpeace and other organizations that are driving around creating data. So it's a mix, and we hope that that mix will help create a more accurate picture of what's actually going on.
And many people in Japan are hungry for that picture, given what Peter Franken says are the frustrations with official government data. The Dutch internet researcher at Tokyo's Keio University is a member of Safecast's Japanese team.
What we have been seeing is that information that has been given has either been given too late, you know, weeks after the measurements were done, or may not have been done in a consistent manner.
Safecast's instant uploads mean that its data is always timely. And it's also established standards for consistency for its volunteers. For instance, they're asked to note where they took their measurements. Since fallout settles on the ground, a reading from a roof can be different from a reading at ground level. Franken says knowing this is especially important when you're trying to determine a possible risk to children.
Kids love to, you know, touch soil, play with it, you know, small babies stick it in the mouth and stuff like that. So when we're measuring, it makes sense to measure at a height of 1 meter, actually a little bit lower than that, to understand what a child is exposed to in daily life.
But even with established standards, relying on citizen scientists means there are always questions about the accuracy of the data. Safecast's Marcelino Alvarez acknowledges the potential problems.
So, you know, we make it very clear on the site that, yes, there could most definitely be inaccuracies in crowdsourced data. And, yes, there could be contamination on a particular Geiger counter, so the readings could be off. But our hope is that with more sensors and more data being reported, that those points that are outliers can be eliminated and that trends can be discerned from the data that's being reported.
American scientist Stephen Franz sees value in this open source model. He runs the small research reactor at Portland's Reed College.
If we get enough databases, enough information, we might see trends that nobody had ever measured because we didn't see them before. And we say, oh, look at that. The radiation levels here are doing this.
Franz also says that having so much data in such a user-friendly format can serve another purpose, helping people understand that not all radiation is due to leaks from nuclear power plants. That background radiation is a natural part of life.
We live in a sea of radiation. We've evolved in it. And since we can't sense it with our five senses, we didn't even know about it till 100 years ago. But we've been living in it all the time.
But of course, accidents and other unusual events do happen. And the situation at the Fukushima reactor site is still volatile. That's why Marcelino Alvarez is continuing to adjust the website in response to suggestions from citizens and scientists. And Safecast just completed a fundraising campaign to send 600 Geiger counters to volunteers in Japan. Alvarez says he hopes that the nonprofit Safecast model can grow, eventually creating a resource for collecting and sharing all kinds of environmental data, from pollen counts and seismic activity to pollution levels. For VOA News, I'm Dina Pritchup in Portland, Oregon.
On a sea of radiation. More on that story from voanews.com, and what they didn't give was the full URL to safecast.org. Monsanto's Agent Orange, that Vietnam-era weapon of a bygone time, is being used currently to help clear the Amazon. More on that from the appropriately named, in this case at least, treehugger.com. 7.6 earthquake hits off New Zealand's Kermadec Islands. Tsunami warning was issued. My dyslexia is acting up as I run on fumes for you here. Dust storms envelop Arizona. Amazing, disturbing video, like something out of a bad Michael Bay film, of the dust storms rolling across Arizona. Sony forces employees to submit to naked body scanners. Use of SSRI, that would be selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or antidepressants that seemingly everybody is on. Use of SSRI antidepressants during pregnancy linked to higher risk of autism. And the gender-neutral preschool accused of mind control. That is the headline from independent.co.uk. At the Igalia Preschool, staff avoid using words such as him or her and address the 33 youngsters as friends rather than girls and boys. From the color and placement of toys to the choice of books, every detail is planned to make sure the children are not exposed to sexual stereotypes. I won't go there now. The name of this BioWars EnviroHealth post is Pretty Silly Yellowstone and Super Fast Jellyfish, which we've used that title before because it's one of the amazing songs off of Gorilla's amazing 2010 album Plastic Beach. Quite prescient that album was and continues to be. A swarm of jellyfish shut down nuclear plant in Scotland. Meanwhile, jellyfish could shut down a nuclear plant in Israel.
Just as a school of jellyfish shut down a nuclear plant in Scotland, a marauding band of turtles delayed takeoffs at JFK Airport in New York City. When in Hitchcock's movie The Birds, the news that different species of birds are working together to harass people, the very proper birdwatcher and expert Mrs. Bundy says, "The very concept is unimaginable. Why, if that happened, we wouldn't have a chance. How could we possibly hope to fight them?" Jellyfish and turtles versus man's faulty, dangerous technology. The drunk in the bird says it far more wisely. It's the end of the world. Christian Finnegan joins me in a moment. The details first. AP reports that some flights at JFK were delayed about 30 minutes when more than 100 terrapin turtles crossed a runway to lay eggs on an adjacent beach. Why did the terrapins cross the runway? The USDA and the state agency that operates the airport eventually moved the turtles to the sand by hand. Here's the play-by-play from the control tower. The American Airlines jet was preparing to take off. Over.
American 663, the turtle in front of you?
Yeah, they're off to my right. There's two of them, and then there's another third one kind of off our nose, about 100 yards.
Okay, American 663, just hold your position. There's a vehicle to your left that's going to go collect them.
Or run them over. Today's turtle takeover spawned a series of turtle tweets, such as, "Got back from Iowa last night, lots to think about for 2012. Give us some time while you wait. Go re-raid your ASOP, you know the fable. They tried dropping us off at a Sparrow. Who does the Port Authority think we are, tourists? The Port Authority can't contain us. Watch out, LaGuardia. We go straight to the runway because it takes 5 hours to get out of our shells with the TSA. And then this one from JetBlue, which is apparently not a joke. JFK is experiencing delays as the airport clears turtles off the runway. You thought that a simple fence would help keep the turtles off the runway. Think again. This video has nothing to do with what happened at JFK today, but be afraid. Be very afraid. In another sign, the apocalypse is coming, and animals, or in this case aquatic life, are leading it. These jellyfish have shut down a nuclear power plant in Scotland. Both reactors at the Torness nuclear power plant are offline tonight because a swarm of jellyfish clogged the water intake tube used to cool the reactors. A marine biologist interviewed by the Reuters news service said that while it's rare to find such a large group of jellyfish in the cool waters of Scotland, it's not uncommon in warmer waters. We believe this is file tape of the jellyfish. You know, maybe the cool waters of Scotland are getting warmer for some reason. Marine experts also say this will become more and more common because of climate change and overfishing the jellyfish habitat. When less predators are there to eat the jellyfish, they can reproduce like rabbits. Oh, so now it's the turtles and the jellyfish and the rabbits against us. I see. I get the picture. Joining me now to analyze the rising of the animals, comedian and end-of-world expert Christian Finnegan. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me, Current, and I do want to say a quick hello to your boss. Vice President, you're welcome.
That's right. All right. To, again, quote the drunk in Hitchcock's The Birds. It's the end of the world, isn't it?
It does seem like there is something amiss in the animal kingdom. I think the one thing that lets us relax a little bit is that I don't see the various species sort of coordinating an attack of any sort. I don't see them getting on the same page. I mean, say what you want about the tenuous coalition of the willing,
yeah,
but I don't remember any of our allies eating each other. So I think until that happens, I feel like we're in good shape.
Well, I don't mean, well, we can debate that. That's a political point. It's separate. But I mean, the timing doesn't, I mean, simultaneous attacks, if you will, on infrastructure. No, I mean, frankly, if these were members of certain minority groups, there'd be a Republican claiming that we're about to be attacked.
Well, I think we need to act like Republicans. We just need to sort of work them against themselves.
Just
play them against each other. And that way, we stay on top.
And which of them wins? Which is the greater menace to us or to each other? Anti-nukes jellyfish or, you know, these cliched Yertle the turtles on the runways?
Okay, well, the no-nukes liberal agenda of the jellyfish community is well documented, but I don't think we need to worry about them. I mean, think about it. Anybody who's watched the Planet Earth DVDs or the movie Oceans knows that jellyfish, or as I call them, sea hippies, they're basically just stoned all the time.
Right.
I mean, look at them just floating around, never working, this fringe hanging off of them, all those psychedelic colors. I mean, they're basically just underwater lava lamps, so I'm not too concerned about them. The turtles I am scared about, the way they just put their lives in jeopardy crawling across that runway,
yep,
it kind of reminds me of that scene at Hyman Roth's birthday party,
yeah,
when Michael Corleone sees the rebel like blow himself up and says, "Well, what does that tell you?"
Yeah,
it tells me they can win.
Or Tiananmen Square.
Absolutely.
It's a turtle standing in front of a tank.
Lying around, never working. That is a rather silly yet fascinating clip from Keith Olbermann's new show on whatever channel it is, and however it's all, you know, foundation funded, left gatekeeping intelligence, insider connected media. Having said all that, it's quite interesting. I love all the media references, Godfather, The Birds, and more. And isn't it interesting that we have people like Keith Olbermann talking about the apocalypse and of course making fun of people like Glenn Beck at the same time, but still giving it attention. And let's remind you again of the story we hit before we hit the jellyfish part, was the bear attack in Yellowstone as the oil spills from Exxon. Let's shift gears now to another ugly list of headlines. Econo crash updates, independence, and the day after. Celebrating independence yet enslaved to debt. That's from the economiccollapseblog.com, just in time for the 4th of July. Assessing our independence this July 4th. That is from the intelhub.com. A prepper's view of Independence Day is from activistpost.com. And the fine folks at Time Magazine break down the Bill of Rights and the amendments, and we'll mention the First and the Tenth. Why the First Amendment is foremost, and the Tenth Amendment and states' rights, both of those from Time Magazine, just as the media attacks America and the Constitution on Independence Day. Cover of Time Magazine, July 4th, 2011, with a Constitution going through the shredder, saying, does it still matter? And we followed last week people like the CFR, CNN, Zareed Zakaria. Do we still need the Constitution? You see how these talking points roll out at the exact same time. You know that they're getting them from their handlers or their connections with the roundtable groups, the Council on Foreign Relations, the think tanks. It's all coordination. So the elites aren't even trying to hide how much they hate the Constitution anymore. That's from endoftheamericandream.com. And Blacklisted News has a piece that actually sources right back to the Malta Independent, independent.com.mt. This isn't their headline, but it gets more to the point, I think. And thanks, as always, to the fantastic BlacklistedNews.com. Ben Franklin was awarded the Knights of Malta Grand Master with a special medal for his role in the Revolutionary War. Amazing video of a tiny camera strapped to lit fireworks capturing its flight. It's just a two-minute video, but the guy just over and over and over again keeps launching off bottle rockets as you blast off in the air and go along for the ride and then soar back down and thunk into the grass. It's beautiful. TheDailyBell.com asking you the question, where will you go when the sovereign debt volcano blows? All you got to do is look at Greece and look in our backyard. And again, and we see the talking points come out. Brzezinski, again, warning, middle class unrest to hit the U.S.
Joining us now from Washington, former National Security Advisor for President Carter, Dr. Zbigniew Brzezinski. Hi, Dad, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So to start off this conversation, we've had a lot of segments this week about the disparity of pay in our society. CEO salaries are up. Corporate profits are up. Bonuses are back. And we've been looking today a lot at the political fight in Washington, and Republicans saying they won't budge on any sort of tax revenue enhancer in any way. If they win this, does that feed into the overall concern you have about the disparity in our society that's growing?
Oh, absolutely. It seems to me that if America were really expanding economically, becoming wealthier, more productive, more innovative, that kind of disparity would be more or less palatable. But when you have stagnation, when you have a rather severe case of unemployment, the sense of social injustice can be terribly demoralizing and politically, in the long run, very dangerous. It can politicize socioeconomic issues, create radicalism, class conflict, extremism. And I think that's a real risk in our society, especially since so many of those who have made so much money recently produce very little wealth for others. They essentially pocket the money. they engage in financial manipulations, but not in enhancing productivity and increasing employment.
Dr. Brzezinski, it's Willie Geist. You've talked about the possibility of civil unrest here in this country. What to you is the tipping point? We know the disparity is greater than ever between the wealthiest and the poorest Americans. At what point would you see the kind of unrest you've described?
Oh, when the lower middle class begins to be more severely affected and really begins to join the ranks of the unemployed or the financially threatened. I don't think we're yet at that point statistically. It has to be a socially significant segment of society. Right now, the problem is more in the realm of social injustice, of what morally is really acceptable in a fair society. But before too long, if there is a slippage in numbers downward, then, of course, it will become a socio-political problem.
Michael.
All right, so, Doctor, here we are. We live in a country today where much of the country is exhausted from fighting three wars. Those wars are being fought by less than 1% of the people in our country. So you're sitting out there and you hold a job that you're not sure will exist a year from now. Your children are going to public schools you know to be inferior to the schools that the wealthy send their children to. So you're sitting there thinking that my kids have kind of a death sentence on their future compared to the people across town who live on the top of the hill. But governing us, we have two institutions, the House and the Senate, and throw the presidency in there now, seemingly unable to get anything done at all. So what do we do about this huge social dilemma we have in the face of a political dilemma that seems unsolvable?
Well, I don't want to be a prophet of doom, and I really don't believe that we're approaching doom. But I think we're going to slide into intensified social conflicts, social hostility, some forms of radicalism. There's just going to be a sense that this is not a just society.
Is the Tea Party the beginning of a society of discrimination? Is the Tea Party the beginning of this, do you think?
Well, the Tea Party is a kind of a reflex reaction against that kind of sentiment. But in any case, unintentionally perhaps, it is also a party that, in effect, argues for the perpetuation of the causes of this injustice.
So, venturing into politics a little bit, Dad, I just wonder if there is which party seems responsible for where we are now? Can you pinpoint that, or is it a collective result? And what should the president do?
Well, I think the president is trying to articulate a point of departure for something that can be called a compromise, because our system works only on the basis of compromise. So I hope he is persuasive. I hope the speaker sees an opportunity for himself historically in reaching a compromise. But the problem is deeper than that. I think the problem is that we have slid into a pattern of really drastic social inequality. I wonder whether you all know that this country, the United States, a country of opportunity, has now the greatest social disparities of any country in the world, worse than China, worse than Brazil. We're the worst in terms of social inequality. And that is a problem that can be only endured if the country is economically successful. And right now we're not.
Oh, the father-daughter intelligence duo. Mika Brzezinski, the co-host of Morning Joe on the General Electric Microsoft Network, and Daddy Zbigniew Brzezinski, author of The Grand Chessboard. And I hope even in that clip you heard the talking points, the repeated phrases and words that he would use, sliding into social inequality. The rest of our EconoCrash updates: independence and the day after. Obama puts Social Security and Medicare cuts on the table. Mixed reaction in Memphis as Mexican truckers get okay to operate in the U.S. This story comes from commercialappeal.com, and they just lay it right out. There are no Spanish language signs on the NAFTA highway, but it's not a bad idea. A U.S.-Mexico agreement on Wednesday steamrolled the last opposition to Mexican trucking firms getting credentials to haul anywhere in the United States, including trucking meccas such as Memphis. The city is in prime position to be affected because it sits midway from Mexico to Canada on the future route of Interstate 69, also known as the North American Free Trade Agreement Highway. Do you remember a few years ago, like in so many other areas, you're a nut if you say these things exist? The NAFTA superhighway, that doesn't exist. But it does. taxing the top 25 hedge fund managers like average citizens would cut the deficit by $44 billion. And a little bit of good news, Washington Mutual shareholders win a $208 million settlement. 16 reasons why the U.S. can no longer afford to be Team America, World Police. That's from IndoTheAmericanDream.com. And as we reported for you last week, and we were covering it on HolyHexes.com, and we'll get to that site in just a little bit, we reported that New York had legalized gay money, I mean marriage. Well, here it is. New York wedding businesses see boost from same-sex marriages.
The window of Rothman's menswear store in Union Square in New York City sends a clear message. They are ready to celebrate the legalization of gay marriage in New York. Owner Ken Gidden.
You know, it's great because, you know, we do a lot of weddings in this store, and we're excited because, frankly, that's a whole other group of people that are now going to be getting married. And, you know, it's, you know, you can do it purely on a math basis. So all of a sudden, every wedding party will have two grooms instead of one.
Hayden expects the change to boost his wedding business by about 20%. While gay weddings can't take place until later this month, couples can now go online and apply for a license. They're expected to add an estimated $284 million to the state's economy, according to the Independent Democratic Congress. Estimates are some 21,000 gay and lesbian couples from New York will marry in the first 3 years, and nearly double that will come to the state for destination weddings. That translates into a lot of wedding gowns, tuxedos, wedding cakes, flowers, and of course, plenty of gifts. That's good news to wedding planners like Ayel Tesler of In Any Event.
We already got calls, you know, people are starting to see what's available out there, when they can get it. So I think it's going to have a beautiful effect on the whole industry.
New York is now the sixth U.S. state to legalize gay marriage and the most populous. That's gotten a lot of chatter on the gay-focused websites run by TheKnot.com. Site editor Anya Winnicka.
We've had a tremendous sort of response to the new law in New York. Our website, gay.weddings.com, had 166% increase the day after the legislation passed, that Saturday. The next day, there was a 66% increase in page views. And since then, we've had something like double the number of same-sex couples sign up for TheKnot.com as members of the site.
And New York City itself is already marketing to prospective brides and grooms with a special section on its NYCGo.com website. Bobby Rebel, Reuters.
We're number one. 20 not-so-good categories the U.S. leads the world in. More on that again from TheEconomicCollapseBlog.com. Movement to abolish corporate personhood gaining traction. More on that from CommonDreams.org, and you should look into the mythical corporate personhood. 10 reasons why Lindsay Lohan is right about the Federal Reserve and the price of food. She apparently seemed to tweet something about, why are food prices going up? Well, it's because the Fed keeps printing money. And then we discovered it was a paid tweet. But she's right. Whether you're still whoring for a company and spilling a crumb of truth. The last note on Econo Crash Updates, Independence and the Day After, Ohio teens rob neighborhood kids' lemonade stand. And that is the shape of things, my friends. There is a clip on that from CNN.com. And I think what we'll do right now before we head into the 7-7 News Purge is play the track that News Purge is named from. We heard the title track at the opening of the show, Culture of Fear, from the brand new Thievery Corporation album. Let's check out the instrumental, False Flag Dub.
Operation. coppery shine, shine, shine.
I guess that wasn't exactly an instrumental, but that was False Flag Dub from the brand new Thievery Corporation album, Culture of Fear. And you're listening to episode 224 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 8th, 2011, and we are broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.com, and huge thanks to RevereRadio.net and ZeroPointRadio.com. We now turn to the 7-7 news purge named for False Flag Dub, and we'll begin with False Flag Updates, our latest 9/11 updates. Charlie Veach of the Love Police disavows 9/11 truth, and the alternative media goes wild. Charlie Veach has become quite a well-known and well-liked face within the alternative media movement, with fantastic street theater and actions going on in the UK and in other places around the world. He has apparently now come out and said, you know, a kid could have flown those planes. Of course Al-Qaeda did it, and he now says he believes the official 9/11 story. This turned into the alternative media distraction. So while we, you know, you want to make fun of all those idiots watching the Casey Anthony story, were we just as into the Charlie Veach story? And you know, hopefully folks that have been listening to the show, you know we don't really play the Patriot games. However, I do know that an interview with Charlie Veach is coming up very soon from a good dear friend of MediaMonarchy.com, and hopefully that's coming up in the next couple of days, and hopefully that will set the record straight. And as the Village Voice reports, the 9/11 anniversary, the 10th anniversary is coming up. Cue the tearjerkers, the media demands. And lastly, I saw the headline on the magazine itself. Even though there's a scantily clad blonde woman on the cover, my eyes keyed in on the article, Who Really Bankrolled the 9/11 Hijackers? The article is called The Kingdom and the Towers, and gets into the redactions and the Saudi kingdom and the intelligence shadow government connections to the false flag terror events known as 9/11. We move to our drug war updates. Hashtag Ask Obama. U.S. spends billions every year prosecuting marijuana violations while the economy tanks. That story is from naturalnews.com, and our hashtag Ask Obama goes to the tweet on twitter.com/mediamonarchy. The Ask Obama Twitter town hall ignores the flood of marijuana legalization questions. Furthermore, from allgov.com, Obama steps up attack on legal marijuana with threat to growers. Weren't we, admittedly, even personally, so foolish for thinking they were going to let us use the seed-bearing plant that our creator, if you believe it or not, says he left them all here for us? And just to help further expose the complete malicious fraud of the war on drugs, how about this from CBS Local out of Miami? Officer of the Year arrested for meth dealing. But let's at least end our drug war updates on, as Bill Hicks would say, a positive drug story. And I'll mention, hashtag navigating Netflix, that in honor of the 4th of July, I watched the amazing new documentary, American, The Bill Hicks Story. But I digress. From Raw Replay in Denver, pot shops now outnumber Starbucks.
It's 4:20 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and William Breeds is hard at work.
And then touch the hash to it.
Smoking hash off a titanium plate. And pot. Lots and lots of pot. All in a day's work for the nation's first professional marijuana critic, a writer for the Denver Westward. Like many restaurant critics, William keeps his identity a secret, so he gets no special treatment at the pot shops. And in the mile-high city, where marijuana dispensaries outnumber Starbucks, and you're more likely to see a pharmacy as you are a pharmacy, a professional critic provides a valuable service.
I was hired as the critic of the dispensaries. The weed thing is definitely a big part of it. People love reading that, I think, and people love seeing the pictures of the herb. I mean, hopefully they are reading my reviews, and they can be like, you know, this place sounds like the type of place I would want to go to. Older crowd, you know, or they specialize in sativas. They've got a lot of hash. The place is really skeezy and doesn't make me feel comfortable. Like, odds are it's not going to make anyone else feel that comfortable. If I'm feeling icky in a place, my grandma would feel icky there, you know? Not that my grandma smokes herb. I was able to pay with a Visa card. No one takes American Express anymore. American Express will not do dealings with medical marijuana shops. My bud tender was friendly and chatty, asking me what my smoking preferences were. The Platinum Perps had an orange-rind tartness to it, which would have gone great with the sticky sweet smell of tangerine haze. Other more unique strains out of Scott's Cocoa Mix Garden, including Scott's Blue, the Tange, and Face Wreck Haze, smelled so good I wanted to make a potpourri bowl out of them for my office.
And as more and more states approve medical marijuana, this specialty is a growing field. But would-be critics be warned, it's not all easy puffing.
This is the one thing that actually only other journalists get is like, yeah, it's fun, I smoke weed, but it's still a job. And I still have to write, and I still have to meet deadlines, and I still got editors. And the subject matter is a lot of fun, but you know, everything else is a job. And if you don't take it seriously, I'm going to get fired.
For The Daily, this is Justin Rocket Silverman.
Ah, a positive drug story. On to the media memes. David Mamet discovers the secret knowledge. This is a three-part and counting series on Andrew Breitbart's Big Hollywood website. And it gets into what they are sneering at boomers like David Mamet and what they've all done to ruin the arts. And I believe you know quite well that just because we link to sites and reference sites, we don't endorse them in any way. But we find their angles interesting to give a more fleshed out picture. So this is part three of the Hollywood Revolt. Boomer David Mamet discovers the secret knowledge, and this is referring to his new book, The Secret Knowledge, on the dismantling of American culture. But furthermore, media memes, Lady Gaga accused of Japan relief fraud. What a surprise. I thought the celebrity fundraising charity things always worked out so well, right, Oprah? Right, Madonna? An interesting site a listener sent to me, it's called lettersofnote.com, where this is posted, and it's typed, from Stanley Kubrick to Ingmar Bergman, and it says, "You are the greatest filmmaker at work today." We close out our media memes, oh, thank God, with a little bit of satire.
It's the Onion Radio News. Atonal composers from around the world gather for the Atony Awards. This is Doyle Redland reporting. The recording industry's top atonal composers came out for a star-studded gala celebration of a rhythmic cacophony last night in Los Angeles, California. Christoph Penderecki, a nominee for the Dissonant Piece of the Year Award, was excited.
Tonight is hostile music's biggest night. I can tell you what a thrill it is to be here to honor such wonderfully impossible noise.
The evening's highlight came during the presentation of the Olivier Messiaen Lifetime Achievement Award to Karlheinz Stockhausen for more than five decades of aggressively impenetrable anti-music. Doyle Redlin for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
I hope you find that funny because you recognize one or two of the names, but oh, thank you, Onion. And then it does remind me that, of course, Soma.fm is one of my favorite internet sites, and not only do they provide Drone Zone, featuring some wonderfully impossible noise, but also amazingly beautiful ambient electronic music. One of their other channels is Mission Control, which, of course, mixes live NASA's audio with experimental ambient electronic music. But I digress again. Murder and mayhem always comes after the media memes. Casey Anthony found not guilty. You, on the other hand, are guilty as... You can fill in the word. Another ridiculous distraction. Well, what will come next? And we added my own alteration of the People Sheeple magazine. Meanwhile, federal appeals court halts the forced medication of alleged Arizona assassin Jared Lee Loughner. And if you recall the story we covered last week about the woman dying of a heart attack after she realized she had already been declared dead and woke up in the coffin at the wake and flipped and had a heart attack and died, how about this one? Mom buried 15 years ago, found alive in Florida. And the breaking and the updates and the murder and mayhem. 7 dead in related shootings in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And the update from WSPA.com, the Michigan shooter rampage suspect committed suicide after the standoff. So just in case you're keeping score, that was 7 dead on 7-7. Oregon oddities. Hashtag Pissgate. Urination saga in Portland Reservoir reveals gap in protecting water supply from drunks and terrorists after 9/11. You only heard this story if you listened to MediaMonarchy.com 2 weeks ago and we reported to you that Josh Cedar could have done some serious harm when he stepped up to the wrought iron fence around a Portland Reservoir last month if he were holding something more ominous than a full bladder. The open-air reservoir contains treated water that goes directly to the people's spigots, and Cedar's decision to urinate there after a night of drinking led Portland officials to drain the entire basin to keep from rattling the public's nerves about the purity of the drinking water. The saga delighted headline and joke writers, but it reveals a threat to urban water supplies in about a dozen cities. Portland has 5 of the up to 30 uncovered reservoirs around the country that contain treated water, some accessible to the drunken public. The fear is that a terrorist could drop or somehow get a toxic chemical agent into a reservoir and sicken people. Never mind the fact that your water is already filled with drugs and rocket fuel. Pay attention to this. Pay attention to the paranoia. And the hashtag PissGate link goes back to our tweet a few weeks ago about this event. The other note of Oregon oddities, questions remain after press conference for a police shotgun shooting. That's right, the shotgun, you know, painted all orange so that you know it's a non-lethal and was supposed to have, you know, non-lethal quote-unquote beanbag rounds in it. Whoops, it had live shotgun shells in it. Gosh. Another great move from the Portland police as police departments all around the country fall apart and compact more into their gang mentality. And we have to make sure we don't play into that. That leads us quite well into the police state updates. The latest Threataganda report, completely unsubstantiated, but this was the Threataganda just the other day. U.S. warning of implanted bombs. And Danger Room notes that body bombs are a good sign, so says a DHS insider, meaning that if Al-Qaeda is resorting to putting bombs inside people, they've run out of ideas. I suppose our intelligence informants will have to give them more ideas and maybe get them on videotape and then arrest them for doing something they were paid and provocateured into doing to, you know, like Portland and the Christmas tree bomber. Cities were on alert as the 4th of July neared, so says NationalTerrorAlert.com. And another meme we've apparently been tracking for you over the last several weeks, the rise in beauty salon thefts and hair extension thefts. And we covered last week on holyhexes.com the holy hair industry out of India. Here we have it again. African-American woman suspects discrimination after TSA hair search.
We've all heard complaints about TSA officers patting down children or the elderly at airports. Well, now there's a complaint of a different kind.
A Shoreline woman wants to know why she and her hair were singled out for a hand search. King 5's Alan Chopper has a story, which is new at 5:30.
It didn't make any sense. I think it is racially motivated.
Laura Adielli had just gone through an advanced imaging search at SeaTac, the kind that shows body images like this, when she was pulled aside.
I was turning around, putting my hands out, ready to be patted down, and she says, no, we're going to have to examine your hair.
She was wearing her hair up in this style at the time, a quick and easy fix for traveling. But to someone, it looked suspicious.
I was resisting more and more, and she said, ma'am, if you don't let us examine your hair, we're going to call the police.
Laura has spent most of her life straightening her hair, but a few years ago decided to adopt a more natural style. She's wondering now why it was her hair that drew TSA attention.
Because there were many other females around me who were not black, who were not having their hair searched, who had curly. I mean, I distinctly remember looking at a woman with her hair in a ponytail, very curly, big hair, thinking, why isn't she being accosted as well?
We couldn't find any specific mention of hair at the TSA website, how to wear it, or what to expect from airport security. But a regional spokesperson points out the agency makes it very clear that any head coverings that might conceal weapons can be searched, and that agents have to resolve those issues at the checkpoint.
The same spokesperson tells me that TSA takes any charges of racism seriously, but in this case, he's confident it was just security officers doing their jobs, being thorough. And for context, he adds this. About 2 million people fly every day, and in 10 years on the job, this is the first time he's heard a complaint about a hair search.
But Laura and her family say it just doesn't feel right, and they're hoping to get more answers.
I felt violated, and I felt like this was inappropriate.
In Shoreline, I'm Alan Schoffler, King 5 News.
Laura tells Alan she filed an online complaint about the search with the TSA this week and is waiting to hear from them. In a statement to King 5, a spokesperson says the agency will be happy to work with her and address any complaints and problems.
Meanwhile, further down the list of police state updates, Barry Satoro, the man commonly referred to as President Barack Obama, and his old buddy from Chicagoland, Mr. Conflict of Interest himself, Eric Holder, they together have dropped 99 out of the 101 cases against the Central Intelligence Agency for their torture of kidnapped patsies and detainees. A little bit of good news. Orlando Cop Watch activist found not guilty. And our last police state update is another story we've tracked for you over the last several weeks. Something strange is going on in Quartzsite, Arizona. I believe we had the mayor arrested. We had the police, I believe, getting together to put a no-confidence vote at the chief of police. And this is off the top of my head, so check out the flashback links for yourself and do the research. Quartzsite, Arizona woman now arrested for speaking at a city council meeting. Hat tip to Cryptagon.com. On to the war whores. Obama heeds the Bilderberg meeting. And they reached the consensus on, of course, abandoning the Iraq withdrawal. U.S. willing to leave 10,000 troops in Iraq past year's end, Los Angeles Times. Countdown to invasion? Question mark. Libya's neighborhoods prepare for NATO's boots. Ground invasion of Libya within 2 weeks? Again, question mark. That's the chatter. That's the inside information. 5,800 attacks are just the beginning. After Petraeus's year-long Afghan war, as he is now moving, switching around as we move around the deck chairs. Gates is out. Panetta's moving. Petraeus is moving. The war agenda goes forward with the happy, smiling, fake left face of the Obamasiah. And you complicitly go along with it. The Army's antenna in the sky, that's from DODBuzz.com, and could that be the cloud computing system that we already reported to you? Doesn't really work very well for $2.7 billion. Scientists say Pentagon misleads on dust study. That's from the USA Today, and we provide the PDF link for you to download that report always lying. And again, we always kind of try and point out that even if you believe in these wars of aggression, wouldn't you think they take care of the guys when they come home? No, they don't. And they lie about what they were exposed to while they were fighting for a dying empire and resource wars. Agent Orange. Or how about the depleted uranium that we are raining down on Libya right now? In addition to the five other active wars that the Obama-Saya currently now has us in. The last note on war horrors comes from SILIVE.com. That's Staten Island Live. The mysterious deaths of two Staten Island Marines. I guess we can add that to the list of mysterious military deaths that we've tracked over the years. And we now reach the bottom of the 7-7 News Purge false flag dub, and we hit West Virginia worry. Hashtag supersize me. And I sent this to Morgan Spurlock. West Virginia is now the third most obese state in the nation. And I fortunately don't fit that mold. I'm a skinny, high metabolism kind of guy. More on that from healthyamericans.org, and we'll reference it yet again when we blast through our Food World Order updates in just a minute. The other note of West Virginia worry from westvirginiarecord.com. False arrest in petty theft case results in civil rights suit against the West Virginia State Police. And that's the 7-7 News Purge, which leads us to the aforementioned foodworldorder.com. The 7-7 binge and purge. Fatty needs a fix. Wonder why Americans are so fat? Question mark. You can find out more from allgov.com that gets into the new obesity rates, which I believe we already referenced are on the front of Google. America sees its obesity rates and raises them. So, asking the question, you wonder why Americans are so fat? Well, how about this one from KPRC? 777-pound burger in California takes the Guinness record on July 4th. There's the triple sevens again. As commodity prices soar, so does demand for wood pulp. Cellulose use increases as a food extender. Put bluntly, they're putting sawdust in your food to stretch it further. Don't tell your kid, but there's cauliflower in his mac and cheese. That's right, Kraft and others now putting nutritious cauliflower powder and acting like it's the greatest health revolution ever thought of. It's not all white. Cocktail of up to 20 chemicals in a glass of milk. That's from the Daily Mail. The FDA and Senator Dick Durbin's sneak attack on supplements. Perfluorochemicals linked with impulsivity. Yeah, the chemicals are making your kids crazy. That's why they're giving them more chemicals. And they get money both ways, coming and going. The last note on this 7-7 binge and purge, Fatty needs a fix. Why I'm saying goodbye to Trader Joe's. That's from LasVegasWeekly.com, and it's a pretty weak argument when better could be made. They just feel good when they're in there. But I'll let you dive into why they're putting up a feeble complaint. Furthermore, on foodworldorder.com, Sonic and Burger King now serving hamburgers, fries, and beer. That's right. America joining the 21st century and letting grown adults decide what they want to drink or eat. Unfortunately, it's wrapped within the fast food nation. And that's always the way that, you know, like the First Amendment. I may not like what you have to say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it. Never really wanted to be a big defender of pretty weak art and artisans like Howard Stern or Two Live Crew. But in this case, also defending Sonic and Burger King. Again, are we free or are we not? Can consenting adults do what they want or not? Can you have a beer? Can you marry who you want? The last note on foodworldorder.com, United Nations report calls for the doubling of food production, again from voanews.com with possible intelligence connections noted in the background. The United Nations warns the world's farmers will have to double the amount of food they produce to keep up with a rapidly growing population. The UN's latest World Economic and Social Survey, with the PDF link provided for you, my friends, taking that extra step to provide you the information. It was released this past Tuesday, and it says global food production will need to jump by 70 to 100% by 2050 to feed an anticipated 9 billion people. The report says such a dramatic increase in food production will only happen if countries make a concerted effort to use production methods that are much less harmful to the environment. It says without making major changes, food production will suffer as a result of climate change and pollution, which is your dirty human fault. The UN report says the world will have to invest $1.9 trillion. Oh my God! About 3% of the total global economic output to boost food production enough to eradicate hunger without doing further damage to the environment. Well, what a thin tightrope we walk, don't we, when it comes down to the Church of Climate Change and the overpopulation myth. And isn't it interesting that all the countries we invade somehow all start growing GM food? Just as they gain the freedom to have a McDonald's. As the Western intelligence enforcement arms open the way for corporations, again, to reference Smedley Butler, war is a racket. He realized he was the enforcement arm of Western corporate interests, the interlocking, interbred families. They know no religion. They don't care about a state. They love when you get into your little gang mentalities. If you want more on nationalism, comma debunking of, check out our latest mixtape, American X. But finally, on this episode 224, we get the few posts on the newest site in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, holyhexes.com, from wikinews.org, billions worth of treasure found in Indian temple. Officials announced that a treasure containing sacks of diamonds and gold coins, as well as golden idols, jewelry, and other riches, has been discovered in the secret subterranean vaults of a temple in the southwest state of Kerala, India.
It'll soon be known just how much treasure is hidden in an Indian temple when investigators begin prying open the final vault. Over the last week, six of the five underground chambers at the Sri Padmanabhaswamy temple have been unsealed, revealing a massive haul of gold. The discovery at the Hindu holy building in the capital of the southern state of Kerala is so far estimated at almost 14 million euros.
No doubt the value what they've indicated here is very conservative. Once the real value comes out, I'm quite sure that the wealth is going to be valued much more than what has been valued now, is what I feel.
Police have been posted to guard the temple day and night to stop looters getting their hands on the tons of gold coins and jewellery. However, in a country where 450 million people live in poverty, a fierce debate is underway about what to do with the newfound wealth.
An incredible newly discovered treasure in southern India. It's inside a Hindu temple built in the 16th century, but they just found it. Security was increased after they looked at stacks of gold statues studded with jewels stored in secret vaults. Officials say the treasure inside that temple is worth $22 billion.
Billions worth of treasure found in Indian temple. Furthermore, on holyhexes.com, our 7-7 Papa Culture News Purge Survey Stealing Slaughter. From churchtimes.co.uk, survey of religious views suggest divided world. Does religion provide the common values and ethical foundations that diverse societies need to thrive in the 21st century? 92% agree in Saudi Arabia, and it's a downward spiral from there on out. But further down the list, Brooklyn bishops ban all lawmakers who voted for gay marriage. More on that from Christian Post. Former pastor pleads guilty to stealing from two Delaware parishes. That's from DelawareOnline.com. The Dutch moving bigger and broader to ban everything that isn't like them. Dutch ban Islamic and Jewish non-stun, quote-unquote, ritual slaughter. So this is about your food and about how it is humanely or not slaughtered. Christian author says a Mormon should never be president. In other news, pot calls kettle a color. And a related one from ABC4.com, and I brought the clip, but we've run out of time, and it was probably cut too long anyway. Memphis Media mocks Mormons, and you can check that out for yourself. ABPNews.com, that's the Associated Baptist Press, has an op-ed saying that now is the time for collaboration among Baptists. Again, if you remember your William Cooper, now is the time is Twilight language. Author Janet Reitman's Inside Scientology book is well-researched and compelling, according to jacket copy on the Los Angeles Times. Prince Albert of Monaco, he is finally married to the princess who tried to run away at least three times. More on that from the Sydney Morning Herald, and holy hexes and royal weddings they are. The last note on this 7-7 Papa Culture News Purge survey, stealing and slaughter is a disturbing one. 7-year-old dies after a TV falls on her at a California church.
Well, the night team is learning new information about the death of a 7-year-old girl inside a church office. Police say she died after a television fell on top of her. KCRA3's Imani Lewis tells us the connection the child had with that church and who witnessed what happened.
My heart just breaks for the family.
Nearby neighbors react after hearing what happened within these walls of Our Lady of Lourdes Church Rectory this afternoon. Calusa police say a 7-year-old girl died after a TV hit her in the head while she attempted to move a TV cart into a conference room with her brother.
What a tragedy. I mean, I don't know how a person could live with something like that.
Catholic Diocese of Sacramento spokesman Kevin Eckery says the children's mother was the parish secretary, and the two children were in another room when the TV fell.
One of the children saw the other one kill, and again, you know, the details really don't matter at this point. What matters is that a little girl is dead and a family is hurting and a community is there to help.
I heard the sirens.
Sarah Caba lives just doors down from the church. As a mother of a 2-year-old, she says she can't imagine the pain the family is going through.
With, you know, almost a 2-year-old, they get into everything, and it only takes a second for something like that to go wrong.
In Calusa, Tamani Lewis, KCRA 3:19.
Calusa police say the child's death has been ruled an accident.
Our final post on holyhexes.com, Tom Hartman discusses occult symbolism on The Big Picture.
These wars and this misguided foreign policy, in my opinion, is a symptom of us all going a little crazy back in 2000, starting with the Republican Party. Let me just share some thoughts on this with you, if I may. This is, war is hell. And in fact, let's go to that whole notion. Not only is war hell, but the notion of evil. We historically in the United States, you know, George W. Bush and the Republicans, just for a moment, let's just imagine that possibly they actually went to the dark side. Historically, this five-pointed star was man. Right? It meant man. It's a good thing. And if you flip it upside down, the upside-down five-pointed star with the goat with his chinny-chin-chin and his ears and his horns was the sign of Satan worshippers. It was a satanic star. Now, you can see on the American flag, our stars are right side up. All across America, you'll see symbols with five-pointed stars. The stars are right side up, the man stars. But around the year 2000, the Republican Party changed their logo from the stars being right side up to the stars being upside down. Coincided with the coming on the scene of George W. Bush and Karl Rove. Very strange. I think they need an exorcism. Let's exorcise them. Here's the exorcism. Number one, end the Bush tax cuts. Number two, end the Bush wars. And number three, end the crazy notion that corporations are people, that money is speech, and that the rich can buy our nation. If we did that, we might bring the Republican Party back to sanity, back to its Dwight Eisenhower roots, back to the days when they actually could have an opposite opinion from the Democrats, but honestly broker solutions and situations and have reasonable conversations. Exorcisms for the Republican Party.
I trust you can parse the partisan poop in that clip and get to the heart of what's really going on. And that's what I try and do every week for you, my friends, on the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. This has been episode 224 for July 8th, 2011. Again, my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show. And I can't do it without you. All your support, monetary or otherwise, spreading the word about this show, syndicating it, tweeting it, liking it, anything. to help spread this kind of information that I hope this show puts it into an accessible kind of format for you, if you like. So having said all that, the way we're going to go out this week is what I'm excited to go do tonight. I'm going to go check out the one and only Nico Case performing at Edgefield here in Portland, Oregon. So we'll go out with a live track from her called Train from Kansas City. And you might want to take a train from Kansas City if you are there. Anywhere, wherever you are, however you are in the world, my friends, I thank you and I appreciate you for listening. As always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation, or mail Media to the Monarchy, at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, Don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.